Hi, this is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health. And today we have an amazing show. Absolutely amazing. We always have good shows, but this one is beyond good. I have my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And we've invited Dr. Brownstein here. Now, he has been with us before, about a year ago. At which time he was publishing this simplistic treatment for the COVID virus. And yet, with this simplicity, patient after patient after patient, at a time when they were using the ventilators and pressing oxygen into the lungs and and you had a 90% death rate of people who went to the hospitals. He was getting success after success after success. And then he was censored. All he was doing was interviewing each of his patients who went through this very simplistic therapy. And they would tell and record how they were doing. And he was censored. He had to take all that from the internet. He had to take the therapy from the internet. And then we really weren't able to speak to him for a while. So welcome, Dr. Brownstein. It's been about a year or 9 months.
Oh, ladies, thanks for having me, ladies. Unfortunately, we're closing in on a year of COVID. You're right.
Yes, we are.
Yes, and you have been one of the heroes. I must tell you, the therapy that you shared with me in my office, I can't tell you. I published it and sent it out, and a doctor from California told me that he read it, and he saved two of his cousins with this therapy.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I didn't even speak with them. They just read the protocol. And, you know, we're all so tired. We're all so tired of this. We're all so tired of the isolation. We're all so tired of the lack of direction. Thank you very much. Wash your hands and keep distance. It's not enough any longer. So I am going to, well, I'm debating whether to tell my history, but you know what? We just discussed it, and so I'll give you one little quick snippet. What happened was a month and a half ago, just like everyone else, we're all tired of it. We think we've got it. I've got everything I need for your protocol, Dr. Brownstein, in my house. I got three sets so that anybody, any of my friends, any of my patients, anybody that need help, can call me and they get everything. I had seven family members over the Christmas time in California who had COVID. And I walked them through it. A couple of them were very sick. And we made it through all seven of them. And they're all well now. So I'm a little...
That's great.
Yeah, I'm a little confident, a little arrogant. I'm continuing to study, and I started reading about this new drug called ivermectin, which they're using a lot in Egypt and Greece with wonderful results, amazing results. So I started taking that as well as trying to keep myself healthy. Well, then I realized I had this dry cough that persisted and persisted and persisted. It's dry. It was getting drier and drier. And then one night, I said, well, you know, I'm going to go home. I'm going to use the nebulizer of your protocol. Come to find out, I'd given them all away. I had nothing more in my house. And then I said, well, that's not a problem because I've got an ozone machine. My ozone machine, 15 years old, broke that week. So I had no ozone. I had no nebulizer. I had nothing. And that night, the cough became so severe that I literally was struggling. I said to myself, you have to breathe in, you have to breathe out. I stayed awake all night breathing in and out to get adequate oxygen. I woke up the next morning. I said to my husband, I know why people die now. And he rushed me to the hospital. And the wait till you hear this story, where they checked my blood oxygen, which was in the low 80s, which is incompatible with organ survival. And they hooked me up. They did a test, found out I had pneumonia, hooked me up to an IV, and stuck me in a hospital. And they gave me remdesivir. So I lay in that room, and my blood oxygen couldn't hold. Nothing they could do. They started out low. They went higher, higher, higher with oxygen. Nothing was holding. And then finally, you know, I'm a little out of it, and it took me 2 days to figure this out. I'm a little slow. I said, wait a minute. It's not holding because the mucus is too dense. When I would blow my nose, this hard rubber cement would come out with sand in it. And that was after blowing and blowing and blowing. Everything, it's like everything had dried up. And so there would be these little hard things on the tissue. Finally, I said, we got to hold the oxygen. Get me a mucilaginic. Get me something that breaks up oxygen. They go, oh, okay. Well, they've left me in a room. I've got a 20-minute IV of 250 ml liquid of the remdesivir and now a steroid. And oxygen, and that's all they do for me. They don't encourage me to drink. They don't help me clean myself. I'm just laying there in bed. Well, then they figured out to give me a mucilaginic, Mucinex. It's over the counter. And I started, I started to be able to breathe again. Now I'm coughing up this gobby stuff, which I couldn't get up before.
That's a little cheaper than $3,000 a day remdesivir.
Yeah.
Remdesivir.
Exactly.
Remdesivir, guys.
Exactly.
Exactly,
so,
yep.
So I start breathing, and now my oxygen level is at 6, and they start being able to lower it slightly because I can start to breathe. And they continue this treatment, and that's all they did was 250 mls. And then finally, I said, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. I get out. Finally, I go home. I've ordered everything for the nebulizer. I walk in my house. My son has the whole thing set up. He's 13 years old. He has the whole thing set up. I sit there for 20 minutes with the nebulizer, and I start coughing, and there's moist mucus, and my blood oxygen came up just like nobody's business. Now, like I said, I had been on ivermectin, which is supposedly a good treatment, did nothing for me. Until I was able to liquid or solubilize the mucus, it was like rubber cement. And it's been a week now, and there's nothing that makes me feel satisfied. I'm always thirsty, and yet I never feel hydrated. And my stools are like paste. It's like pushing a piece of cement through me. And I'm just now, I'm just now beginning to come back. But I get it. I'm a little slow, but I get it. So I want to thank you so much. You literally saved my life and many of my family with your, and I'm going to say it, laugh, simplistic therapy that got it. Can you explain that to us? Why?
Well, you know, let me just start from the beginning. You know, this therapy wasn't specific for COVID. This was just a flu and influenza-like illness therapy. And so when I became a holistic doctor about 27, 28 years ago, you know, flu season approached. There was nothing for treating people who got sick with viral illnesses in conventional medicine. You know, that was before Tamiflu, which doesn't work anyways and is associated with horrendous side effects and should be pulled from the market. But, you know, there was no Tamiflu. There was no nothing. So basically, with 20,000 to 80,000 people dying a year from the flu, there's nothing to offer them. You know, just stay home and, you know, hope you don't die. Get sick. So what I started researching was, I was practicing holistic medicine. I was drawing people's blood tests. I was looking at mineral levels and, you know, hair and urine and things, and finding, you know, to my surprise, everybody's deficient in basic nutrients. Uh-huh. So, you know, I was using, you know, correcting things. And so what I was finding was that, you know, everyone's deficient, not everybody, but a lot of people are low in vitamin C and many are deficient in vitamin C. You know, many people are low in vitamin A. You know, vitamin D, everybody was low on. You know, I live in a northern climate. Maybe that was part of it, but, you know, everybody was low on vitamin D. And so those were the first three things I concentrated on. And, you know, as I started reading, you know, I started checking these levels and finding people low, I'd go to the medical literature and start pulling the articles, start reading about them. And, you know, these things are all integral to immune system functioning, to support both the innate and the adaptive immune systems. And so I thought, well, heck, if you're sick with a viral illness, why wouldn't you want to take these vitamins, perhaps larger amounts for a few days, to support the two sides of the immune system? And so those were the things that I started with, was vitamin A, C, and D. And as I learned new things and as I was, you know, growing in my practice, I tweaked the therapy a little bit. And, you know, iodine was the next thing that came on board. You know, I was diagnosing all these people with hypothyroidism and looking for why so many, 3/4 of my practice was having thyroid problems. And, you know, the nutrient iodine always came to mind because the highest concentration of iodine in the body is in the thyroid gland. You can't make thyroid hormone without iodine. And, you know, as a bonus for the viral illnesses, iodine has virucidal, bactericidal, it kills parasites, it kills any infectious organism.
It's mucolytic.
From our own internal, I'm going to get to the mucolytic stuff too. but, you know, it has, you know, we still use iodine in medicine. We've used iodine medicine for 100 years to clean the skin before surgery.
I asked people in the hospital, why would you want iodine? The doctors and the nurses, they were wonderful. They were wonderful. I have not a criticism of them. They said, why would you want iodine?
You should send them David's book on iodine.
Yeah. Perhaps you could say, You want iodine because iodine levels have fallen over 50% over the last 40 years, you know, according to the NHANES study. And in Canada, I've done a few lectures in Canada. I looked up those numbers. They're very similar numbers to the U.S. Mm-hmm. You know, iodine levels have fallen across North America for a long time. And, you know, the average iodine levels measured in pregnancy age women were deficient in iodine. And in my practice, I've tested over 7,000 people between me and my partners, and over 97% are deficient in iodine. The vast majority, significantly low in iodine, and iodine deficiency is alive and well in our modern world, unfortunately. So I thought, well, heck, I'll add, you know, I already have people on iodine, but, you know, if they get sick with viral illness, I would tell them to double their iodine dose for 4 days, and whenever they were on. And if they weren't on iodine, I'd put them on 25 milligrams. And, you know, when I started adding iodine, which was quickly after I started the vitamin A, C, and D, you know, this therapy works. The patients would, you know, 20 to 80,000 people die a year from the flu across the U.S. I've been practicing close to 30 years. Multiply those numbers out, we should have a bunch of deaths in our practice from the flu, a bunch, and many hospitalizations for pneumonia from the flu and flu-like illness. We don't have any of this stuff. I mean, it's not like our patients don't get sick. They get sick, but our patients aren't, they don't get real sick with this, with these illnesses, and that's because we're supporting their immune system. So the basic core of, you know, what I was doing was, you know, and I'll give the doses out, you know, vitamins A, C, D, and iodine. And then, you know, when people get the flu and flu-like illnesses, and, you know, especially the older people or people with asthma or COPD, you know, they get lung involvement, they get mucus production, they get, you know, they get short of breath. And so, you know, iodine as a bonus has mucolytic properties to it. It's the best mucolytic agent out there. So having them take large amounts of iodine when they're sick really helps out.
It thins the mucus.
And then I was I'm always reading old literature. I love the old case histories, and you know, it's you know, Carol and I have talked about this for years. I think it's fascinating to look at what doctors wrote about their patients from the early 20th century and even the late 19th century. And you know, a lot of that's on the internet. And you know, I have these old books that I go through, and there was a doctor in India who was writing about nebulized hydrogen peroxide and IV hydrogen peroxide. And he was writing about IV hydrogen peroxide for soldiers that got pneumonia during the British Indian War.
Okay.
And the death rate at that time in the early 20th century was over 80% if you got pneumonia. That was before antibiotics were discovered. So he knew about hydrogen peroxide. He tried hydrogen peroxide IVs on these soldiers, and the death rate plummeted down to, I don't remember the exact number, but I believe in half or less than that, 20, 30%. So he wrote that if you have pneumonia, you should dilute IV hydrogen peroxide. So I studied hydrogen peroxide, and you know, we added IV hydrogen peroxide to the therapy. Well, that was a really cool addition because that helps out a lot of people for a lot of problems, especially lung problems. The lungs produce a huge amount of hydrogen peroxide. Hydrogen peroxide is produced in every cell in the body all the time. And the white blood cells use it to kill foreign invaders. And it also oxygenates tissue, which is helpful if you're having trouble breathing. And, in my further research of hydrogen peroxide, I came across nebulized peroxide, where you put a dilute solution in a nebulizer and breathe it. And that was really stunning. People who have asthma, COPD, you know, lung cancer and coughing and short of breath and, you know, whatever, and they're sick and short of breath, when they started nebulizing peroxide, many times that just immediately started to go away. So we fooled around with different doses because it wasn't really clear with nebulizing peroxide what doses were the best, which were... It all seemed safe from the old literature, but they weren't real clear on the dosing. And, you know, I saw stuff on the internet. People were using 1%, 3%.
Right,
you know.
Right. And so it's a little irritating.
It is irritating. And
it's not correct.
The first patient to take anything in our practice when we come up with something new is us, the doctors.
Uh-huh.
Particularly if I'm working on it, it's me. So I tried different versions of it. You know, I have asthma, severe asthma, and I have severe scoliosis with a 65-degree curve and lung involvement. And I used to be on all the inhalers and steroids and all that stuff. And then, you know, once I cleaned up my diet, corrected my nutritional deficiencies, that kind of went away. I really don't use any of that stuff anymore. Minimal amounts I use, you know, if I get a cold or something. But so I was trying it, and I found that, you know, 3% worked. It was a little irritating on the throat.
Yeah.
1% worked. It was less irritating on the throat. But so did 0.04% when I diluted it
Really?
Markedly down.
Wow.
And it worked the same.
I didn't realize.
And my partner, we started trying it on our patients, and we found that dose worked. Why not use the lowest dose? We had no side effects. The only side effects we had with it were perhaps in a patient here and there it didn't work, but there were no adverse effects. And that became a mainstay of our flu program. So now we're up to high doses of vitamin A, C, D, and iodine orally, nebulized hydrogen peroxide. And in this nebulized peroxide, we put a little bit of iodine. So you're nebulizing peroxide and iodine, which was all in the old literature. I mean, this was, lots of doctors had done this in the early 20th century. And, then as my practice was growing and I was going to these conferences, you know, we started doing IV nutritional therapies. And we quickly added IV vitamin C, IV hydrogen peroxide, and ozone into our practice. And these all are therapies. They help to oxygenate tissues. They help to kill viruses and bacteria and parasites. And, you know, they're good for lung problems. And we only use the IV therapies if people were really severe. And so pretty much over the last 25 years, that's what we've been doing. And our patients don't get hospitalized, they don't get pneumonia, and they certainly don't die at anywhere near the published rates. I mean, I talked to my partners, when do you last recall a patient dying from the flu? I mean, if it's 20 to 80,000 a year times 28 years, we should have our share of patients dying from this stuff, and we just don't. None of us can, you know, I mean, we had a patient here or there, but if we just don't recall it, and it's not a routine thing, and it's, you know, we used to round on our patients in the hospital. We never rounded on patients hospitalized for pneumonia secondary to, you know, flu or flu-like illness. It didn't happen in our practice. So when COVID came around, you know, the first reports out of China, the end of December in 2019, of an atypical pneumonia that they determined or they reported was a coronavirus variant, SARS-CoV-2. And, then it came to the U.S., I believe, the end of January, beginning of February from the West Coast were the first recorded cases. And, you know, as all that happened, I vividly remember following every story that came out with it, and I thought, here's what I've been, you know, not planning for, but just waiting for. I mean, I knew
we'd have that specter over us for years. So it's saying what one of these years we're gonna have a serious infectious thing.
Yeah, it's coming. I mean, I knew it. And the population was growing. We were, you know, we're a big country now and a lot of people, and it's just going to happen. I mean, we're going to travel with the plane flights everywhere, you know, and it's going to cross over the world very easily because we're so interconnected now. I was waiting for it. I was amazed it didn't happen in my first close to 30 years of practicing. But it happened, and then as it moved across the country from the West Coast to the East Coast, I was in Michigan, and I had a meeting with my staff the end of February of 2020, and everyone's on edge. The reports out of Italy were horrendous. You know, they were
amazing.
Trucks to get the bodies out of the hospitals. They showed those pictures of people in the wards in the hospital where there's, they're all on ventilators, you know, 2 feet from one another, and they're stacking the bodies up, and, you know, it was horrible. China was totally locked down, you know, those areas, you know, affected by the virus, and, you know, there were pictures of the crematoriums in China, you know, running 24/7, you know, even though China wasn't quite reporting the numbers accurately, I don't think, but, you know, the headlines in the paper were, and the modeling, you know, recall the first modeling. We would have, I believe it was near 2 million deaths and, you know, 5 or 6 million cases, you know, by, I can't remember exactly what they said, by 6 months into this or something. That was a prediction out of England for the U.S.
Right, right.
And it was something like that, you know, some horrendous number. You know,
it was a geometric progression. The more people that got sick, it would go up like crazy. Everything would go just off the charts. But that's not usually how infections work. And everybody jumped on the bandwagon that it was going to be going up there until everybody died off virtually, rather than kind of a curve where there's a big increase and then it starts to go down again. And that's indeed what...
And that's how all respiratory viruses act. It just,
yes.
They come, they and I use this term not lightly, but they, you know, if there's a lot of tinder, the tinder burns and a lot of, you know, old people, sick people die. And then when they die, the virus becomes endemic and part of society and settles down. And
mm-hmm.
That's what we're turning to right now, you know, the endemic part. But so COVID was coming. You know, the first case in Michigan was somewhere in the beginning of March. And it was, you know, New York was already, you know, reports out of New York were horrible. And then the three real hot spots in the country were I live in, you know, Metro Detroit.
Oh, really?
And New York City, Massachusetts, and New Jersey. Those were the four major hot spots that, you know, geometric increase in number of cases and then hospitalizations. There was, you know, reports that hospitals were going to overflow and there were refrigerator trucks to take the bodies. And, you know, where I live, the hospitals were, they never overflowed. They were busy. And, you know, there was a big concern they were going to overflow. And then, you know, recall during that time, if you got ventilated, there was over an 80% chance you're going to die.
Exactly. Right?
And doctors didn't know how to treat it. And they were trying their best. And, you know, we were treating it incorrectly at first. And it was new. We didn't understand, you know, how to best support people with this like we do now. And, you know, we made a lot of mistakes. There's two frustrating things for me with coronavirus. Number one, the CDC should have had a plan in place for a viral pandemic since we all knew this was going to happen somewhere in our lifetime. More than likely, you know, would happen, that this is what you do. And all we had to do was do what Hong Kong did, what Taiwan did, South Korea. You know, what you do is you quarantine sick people right away. You case control if they're exposed to anyone else, you quarantine them. And you control the spread of this thing until you can gather your data and gather your wits and figure out how to treat it. We didn't do any of that. You know, we did some minor things. You know, President Trump canceled the flights from China. I think that was
really
the end of March. Or
yeah, no, it was January.
Early, but it was too late. It was too late then when he did that. Because we didn't quarantine and we didn't case control the six that were there. And the CDC.
We didn't want to know.
All the alphabet soup failed us. NHS, the FDA, they all failed us.
Uh-huh.
And so once it escaped to enough people, that was it. We were done. It was going to go through. You know, it's a new virus. We didn't have immunity to it, and it's going to race through us, and it's going to kill the weak. And you know, we had a soft flu season last year, so this is how the flu season goes. When you have a soft flu season for a year or two, there's a lot of tinder that builds up, and there's going to be a lot of deaths the year after or the year after that. And we were primed for a bad flu season, anyways, death wise, and so it. It hit us, and it hit us hard, and it's a massive failure of the federal government, you know, in every way and shape and form, you know.
We're in the middle of a conversation with Dr. David Brownstein, a doctor who's been working with viruses for over 25 years and explaining to us how we can build our health to create a natural resistance. Let me ask you, because in the beginning, I think we interviewed you in March or February, and we were talking about this protocol and moisturizing and why it was so important and blah, blah, blah. And they came and blocked you from releasing information, did they not?
Well,
why do you think?
Here's what happened. So COVID comes around, I start treating So I have a meeting with my staff. I tell them at that meeting, hey, I can't guarantee anything, but I think we have this covered. We've got this viral protocol, oral high-dose vitamin A, C, D, and iodine, nebulized peroxide and iodine, and IVs if they need it, of vitamin C, peroxide, and ozone. And I said our patients have done great over 25 years. I don't see any reason this illness is going to be any different for us. I said, I can't guarantee anyone anything, but I think as much as I can say, we've got this covered, we've got this covered. We're going to support the immune system. It's not a direct treatment for coronavirus. It's a direct treatment for the immune system to support it. And we were designed pretty well by our maker to survive these things. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. You know, we're full of viruses. And so, lo and behold, it starts working. You know, we're seeing patients. They can't breathe. They're scared to go to the hospital because of the reports of the deaths. And the hospitals are telling you not to go unless you need to go. CDC is telling you not to go unless you need to go. And they don't tell them anything else. They just say, stay home. You know, lock yourself down. Wait for the vaccine. And we have nothing to offer you.
Wash your hands.
So, yeah, well, they didn't even focus on that much. But no. Stay home, right? And wear a mask and stay home. And quarantine yourself. So I'm doing this therapy. It's working. And the first week we did it, we were all scared. We were, you know, I'm not the best person to get a viral illness with asthma and scoliosis, and I have an immune system deficiency problem. You know, I was scared. And, you know, we were going outside to treat these patients, put their IVs in them.
In the snow.
And the sleet and ice winds. And
I saw
pictures.
We're
taking turns and cars are lined up outside our building for these IVs. We're putting people in nebulized peroxide and mixing up peroxide for them sterilely and, you know, all the stuff. We're doing the whole program. And lo and behold, it took us about a week to 10 days to settle down because we see our patients getting better. They can breathe again. They don't feel like they're going to die. They don't have to go to the hospital. And, you know, I start cataloging it. And, you know, eventually we treated 107 patients, and I peer-reviewed it and got it published. And, you know, what happened was I was interviewing patients because there was no hope out there. I mean, there was no hope. Yep. The headlines were, stay home, wait in your house. There's nothing to offer until we get this vaccine. And if you go to the ER, you know, they ventilate you, you're going to die. That was the hope out there. So I started titling the interviews, there's still hope out there, 1, 2, 3, 4. I got up to, I think, in the 20s. And I was interviewing patients, and, you know, they told the same story. They got sick. They would call their doctor. They, you know, they had a primary care doctor. Doctor would tell them, stay home. Nothing else. You know, nothing else they could do. Isolate yourself from your family. And they didn't talk to them about diet. They didn't talk to them about drinking water. They didn't talk about anything.
Exactly.
And just stay home. Don't go to the ER unless you have to. So they would turn to us. We would get them going on the, you know, vitamin A, 100,000 units a day for 4 days. Vitamin D, 50,000 units a day for 4 days. Iodine, they weren't on iodine, 25 milligrams a day for 4 days. If they were on it, they just doubled whatever they were taking. And then ACD, vitamin C, 1,000 milligrams of ascorbic acid orally every hour that they could tolerate it, you know, with their stomach. And, you know, if they and then if they were short of breath or coughing or any lung, anything, they would get a nebulizer and start nebulizing 0.04% of hydrogen peroxide. And I published all that. And I just said, here's how you make it. You can make it at home. You know, and I never advertised, you know, buy the supplements from me. I just said, here's the supplements. Health food stores have them.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I get a letter from the FTC somewhere in the end of March, beginning of April, saying, you know, I'm violating federal law number whatever it was, and because there's no treatment, prevention, or cure for COVID, your mention thereof is falling against this federal law, and you have 48 hours to remove everything that you talked about COVID, or you're going to hear from the U.S. Justice Department. And, you know, I remember I got the letter on a Tuesday. Tuesday's my late day.
Uh-huh.
I stayed later because we had IVs to do after work, you know, and, you know, I get home and I'm tired and I'm hungry and I'm standing at the door, you know, I walk in and my wife's desk faces the little vestibule when we walk in, and her and my daughter, Jessie, are, you know, looking over the computer. They look up at me and I see the look on their face, and first I thought someone died, I'm like, what's wrong?
Yeah.
And they said, oh, you know, the FTC sent us a letter that we're going to have to take everything down that you've been writing about. And I said, the FTC, I said, you mean the Federal Trade Commission from the U.S. government?
Uh-huh.
She says, yes.
Unbelievable.
I said, what's their problem? And my wife's a lawyer. She says, I read the letter three times, quoting my what? Well, I won't tell you what she said. But my wife said, it's not, she goes, I think it's nonsense. They think you're advertising a COVID cure, and I think we ought to take everything down. Now, I'm standing there with my coat on, my bags in my hand. I'm not moving. And, you know, I make a swear word come out of my mouth. And I said to her, the next word out of my mouth was, maybe it's time to retire. And she looked up and she said to me, you're not retiring over this. She goes, this is nonsense. They're not happy with you. Let's talk about how we're going to deal with this. And if you want to retire, retire. She goes, but not over this.
Uh-huh.
You know, we'll handle this.
That's wonderful.
And so,
wonderful. Yeah. You got such a partnership.
So I read the letter, you know, felt like vomiting and,
yes.
You know, my wife's trying to feed me dinner. I'm like, I can't eat now. And, I said, what do we do? And I said, I read it. I said to her, I don't understand what their complaint is. So she explains it to me. And then I said, well, what are you going to do? And I'm like, she says, I think we should take everything down. So I read it again. I look it up to her and I'm like, I don't understand this. What is their problem? And the third time I asked her, I got it. And what the problem was, they think I was advertising for my practice. Now, they called it an advertisement. They didn't call it a blog post. They didn't call it an interview.
Uh-huh.
They called it an advertisement. So I was advertising the prevention, treatment, or cure for COVID. When I never said anything for COVID, I said we're supporting the immune system.
Yeah,
so,
a lot of integrative practitioners got caught up in that web.
Yep.
The last count I heard was over 250.
Oh, it's more than that. I think it's
and
over,
I'm sure it's more.
Yeah, it's 300 or 400 now. And so we looked on the FTC site, and there was me, and there was a bunch of my friends that I saw got letters. I called a couple of them, and they hadn't been posting as much as I was posting. They weren't as concerned because they just had a few little, or they were posting my stuff.
Uh-huh.
They had a few. They just took it off, and you know. But I was hearing from people all over the world, you know, and so we complied with the FTC. We took it off. They sent us a letter saying, you know, you complied, and you know that's.
You stopped your whole
that's
blog
where it's
post.
Good, and
yeah.
I stopped everything. I took everything down at that point. And so, you know, we sent a letter to them saying we never mentioned the patients had COVID, but this was a treatment for the immune system.
Yep.
And because there was a mention of COVID, it's a prevention, treatment, or cure for that disease. And because the FDA and the CDC hadn't authorized anything saying that that works at that point, there was nothing they were saying. There was nothing to do.
Yep.
So when I look back on it, what I think I should have done with my patients who called me and they couldn't breathe and they were sick, saying, because there's no prevention, treatment, or cure for COVID by the CDC and the FDA and the FTC, I can't tell you anything except go to the ER or stay home and quarantine yourself.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, call me in a month if you're still alive.
That's
that would have kept me out of their crosshairs. And, we ended up hiring a First Amendment lawyer over this, and he basically said that FTC's always kind of they don't like patient testimonials. Number one, he told me to stop doing that.
Uh-huh.
And
really?
He says for anything they don't like it.
That's powerful.
And he said number two. He said, number two, COVID is different. And he said, politics has gotten involved, and the FTC is being the arm of the pharmaceutical companies who gave them a couple $100,000 to search the internet for people writing about COVID and any treatment for COVID and take them down. And so that's what they were doing. And so he, you know, cost me a lot of money to hear what I kind of already knew. You know, here we are. We're still treating COVID. We went from 107 patients to now, I don't even know what the number is now, but it's over 200, probably over 250. And, you know, our numbers are the same. We have a couple of hospitalizations, and we have no deaths in our practice from COVID. We have a couple of patients referred to us from other doctors, and one older gentleman was just referred to my partner who had been sick for 2 weeks with COVID, and he was in his late 80s and had bad COPD, bad heart disease, and my partner treated him for 2 days, and he died on the third day. Mm-hmm. He's the only death sort of that we treated, even though it wasn't our patient. But none of our patients died, and only a couple were hospitalized. And, you know, our feedback from our patients from, you know, nebulizing peroxide, taking the oral therapy, occasionally doing the IVs if they needed them. We're still doing them outside, you know, even through this winter. We're great. They could breathe again. They could feel better again. I got one now that I'm talking to. You know, I only have one patient now with it because it seems to have, it's dropped off. We're not hearing about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's at least good for us in Michigan. You know, I think enough, hopefully enough people have had it. It'll just sort of, the pandemic appears over here. I mean, it is over here, cause, you know, it's not by definition. And it's just probably going to become endemic at this point. And, you know, look, either people figure out how they're going to survive these things, because this thing will come back next winter. You know, it'll be endemic. And it'll mutate, because we already know it has. And you better have a strong immune system to help yourself through this.
Yeah, well, because that's the only thing.
It's the only thing that's going to get you through it. I mean, antibiotics don't cure pneumonia for anybody. Antibiotics lower the bacterial count, and so your immune system can, you know, get a hold of it. That's how they work. Antibiotics don't cure bronchitis. Antibiotics lower the bacterial count, so your immune system can go into gear and take care of it and, you know, get the bacteria out of there and the pus out of there and, you know, heal you again. You know, for viral illnesses, we don't really have great therapies. You know, we don't have antivirals that work great for this thing. We need an immune system. And, you know, we need a strong immune system. We were designed to have one. And if we support it appropriately, it should be able to do its job. And, you know, in our patient population, we've seen that play out.
Now, you've just written a new book, and it's specifically on viruses. Is that not the case?
So I wrote a book, and it's titled A Holistic Approach to Viruses. And, you know, what the First Amendment lawyer told me was, well, you know, people think they have a First Amendment protection. It's free speech. He goes, that's not true. He said, but books have First Amendment protection, and they're pretty well protected. Because I told him I want to write a book. Because now that I pulled my blog down, I had to stop writing. I had all this time on my hands, you know, and I'm not one to have excess time on my hands. I like to be busy. I like to write. I like to do things. And so I went to work, had time on my hands, and wrote my holistic approach to viruses and, you know, and went into the detail of why, you know, how the immune system works, how it responds to viruses, how we can support the immune system. And it's not just taking vitamins, A, C, D, and peroxide and all that stuff. It's eating good. It's keeping sugar out of your diet. It's drinking water and keeping hydrated. You know, Corinne, you had the mucus issues. You know, iodine is one of the best anti-mucolytic or one of the best mucolytic substances out there. It thins out mucus. You drink enough water, that helps. Keep sugar out of your diet, that helps. Exercise helps. You know, those are all doing the basic stuff. So, you know, I talk about all that in my book. And I think that, you know, COVID-19, the last chapter in that book I titled, why can't I remember that title? It's, I almost titled the book this. The book is titled A Holistic Approach to Viruses. It's on my website, drbrownstein.com. But, oh my goodness, where's my preface?
Where's your book?
I got my book in my hand.
Oh, okay.
It's titled, so the last chapter, I almost titled the name of the book, This Is Our Wake-Up Call. And I put in there that this should be no surprise what happened to us. Our country has been a disaster from the beginning of COVID-19, when we didn't properly quarantine and case control people associated with them, to basically stay home, wait for a vaccine, wear a mask, and social distance, and we got nothing else to offer you. You know, during that time, we have over 400,000 dead, and, you know, there were therapies out there that we should have been doing and should have been studying, and, you know, my protocol was one of them. And,
right. Instead of massive censoring, I mean, anything, as you pointed out, anything that hinted of any success with helping people with viral conditions and viral pneumonia, all of this is getting, like, pulled off the internet and social media faster than people put it up. And it's horrendous. We should have this information, and we should be
able to utilize it. Go on.
How do we survive as a country, and how's Canada going to survive as a country if there's no debate on anything? I mean, it's
right.
This is how we're doing it, and that's it. I'd like to see how these two countries survive, because they're not going to. And censorship, you know, look, I've read about censorship, and, you know, I think it's terrible, and First Amendment and all this stuff, you know, where's our Constitution? And then I get hit in the head with a 2x4, and I have to take everything down. And it takes a whole new meaning, you know, level of meaning to me. And, you know, it's just, I'm amazed at the amount of sheeple in our country, and they just, no one says a word, and everyone follows suit. And
it's astounding.
And it is astounding. I really thought we stood for more than that, and we would, and it's you know, people say it's, you know, it's the left. It's just not the left. It's the left and the right. You know, it's
right.
You talk about things that the other side doesn't want to hear, they don't want to hear it, and they want you gone. And they'll do whatever they take to get you to shut up. And, you know, I think that it's a bad place we're in right now, and I think that with coronavirus killing over, you know, 400,000 of us, we're closing up 500,000, you know, anyone who talks about what a success we've done with this is sadly mistaken. And, you know, we should have a Manhattan Project to look at what went wrong, how do we not do this again, and how can we support people's immune system so they're healthier, because Americans are not healthy people. You know, 2/3 of us are overweight, 1/3 are obese. We're all nutrient deficient. Our food is terrible. The pesticides they're using is ridiculous. The hormones that are out there, the synthetic hormones in the marketplace, are, you know, driving 1 in 7 women to have breast cancer, 1 in 3 men to have prostate cancer. Compare us to every Western country out there, and we finished last on every health indicator, from neonatal mortality to maternal mortality during pregnancy to longevity. And COVID-19 illustrates exactly what's wrong with us. This is why per capita we have more deaths than any first world country. I mean, than any, first world country, than any second world country, and every, you know, I don't know about second and third world, but they don't have nearly per capita deaths we have. And we have just been decimated by this. And, you know, we've just kind of been told, wait for the vaccine. And now the vaccine's out, everyone's excited, and what a success we've had. I mean, it's like, what's that? You know,
and we have no idea the vaccine will work.
No, we have no idea. And, you know, look, if you look at the previous animal studies on the mRNA vaccine, they weren't pretty what happened to those animals.
No,
and that's why they could never get out of animal trials. So we're seeing, you know, we're skipping that, and we're going to see when these animals, meaning humans who've had the vaccine, get exposed to that virus again. We'll have to see what happens. If the same thing happened to us, what happened to the animals, we're in big trouble, folks. And, you know, the immune system is not ready for what's going to happen. And I don't know what's going to happen, because it's a big experiment we're under right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we should be able to debate this. We should be able to talk about this. And when we debate it and when we talk about it, we'll be stronger as a country. When we censor, we're not going to be stronger. We're going to be weaker, and we're going to make more mistakes.
Can I give another example of what I saw in my practice? I had a patient, an older man, and who was slim, but on antihypertensives and statins. And he had a dry cough. He had COVID. It had been now 10 days. And a friend of his called me and said, listen, you got to help him. He's in bad shape.
So I call over there, and the wife answers and said, "What? Why are you calling my house?" She said, "We've got a good doctor." I said, "Listen, he's been 10 days. This guy could crash." And you can hear him having difficulty breathing in the background. You could hear that dryness, air gasping, gulping. And so finally, I said, "Okay, call me back if you want help." Hung up the phone. He calls me back. And I hear his wife in the background. "We've got a good doctor. What do we need her for? Blah, blah, blah." He said, "Help me." So we got him the nebulizer exactly the way you said. "Well, I can't get it. I can't this." I literally had my nurse grab what we had in the office and bring it to his house. They brought it to his house, and I demanded that he do the nebulizer that night and the next morning. The next morning I called because I didn't know, you know, he could have crashed at any minute. He was in that bad shape. He was like me, that he was gasping for air. The next morning his wife answers the phone and says, "It's a miracle." I said, "Do you know who you're talking to?" I thought she made a mistake. She said, "It's a miracle. He can breathe. It's been twice he did the nebulizer. After the first time, he could breathe."
Twice. Uh-huh. That's what we hear all the time. The first one a little bit better, and they do that second treatment.
Yes.
They can breathe again. And it's always on the second one that we're hearing it, you know, hearing good results.
Well,
that's amazing.
He stabilized, and he's good now. He's there to help us. He's a good man. He's a good man. It would have been sad to lose him. But that's because of you. So
I heard that story repeated. Thank you for sharing it.
Yeah, I just want to tell you, good things have been being sent out to you for months and months and months in terms of the care that you give, and it's been amazing. Like I said, you changed my family.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. And, you know, when I went through that time and thinking about retiring, and, you know, we took everything offline, and then I started getting all these messages sent to me through my office, through snail mail, through messaging on my office site, and it was around the world. And my wife, you know, we kept them, and we made all these files, and, you know, she was crying reading all the messages, and some of them teared me up, and they really helped me out, and it was really nice to hear that. That got me through that, and that was a really good thing. And then, you know, my next message I put out was like, you know, I wrote the book, and people were shocked. They thought, you know, I was done, and I'm like, no, I'm not.
Just regroup to fight again.
Crazy right now.
What?
Yeah, COVID's crazy right now. You still can't talk about it, and but you know, the book has First Amendment protection, and you know. It's a sad place we're in right now, but, you know, we need the public to stand up and, you know,
take care of themselves.
Talk about the censorship. Yeah.
Well, take care of themselves, stand up.
The sad part.
Tolerate censorship.
The sad part is they still don't get it. I got all these people that I talk to. They're just waiting for their turn to get the vaccine. They think it's over.
Yeah, I know.
With the vaccine now.
The vaccine who's not been shown to prevent transmission, not been shown to prevent someone from getting sick. Hopefully prevents them from getting really sick, but we don't know. It's only on 100 people they've shown that on, and we'll see. And, you know, that's why I wrote in the book is I hope it's safe and effective, and, you know, we'll see. For the animals that got this vaccine, it wasn't so safe and effective. And is there any reason to – the only way we're going to know that is when people are exposed again to coronavirus, because they exposed all those animals that got the vaccine to coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
And humans, we don't do that. We don't give them the vaccine, then expose
them.
Waiting till it goes on. But right now, coronavirus is plummeting down in cases across the U.S. And, you know, so it might, you know, we might not be able to tell this until next year. We'll see.
Amazing. Absolutely.
We have a similar vaccine for dengue fever. I believe they used it in the Philippines. It's supposed to behave in the same way. And people started dying after they were exposed to dengue
kids. It was a huge amount of kids died. The Philippine population was pissed. And, you know, the big pharma people who were doing this dengue, and they saw this dengue vaccine, they saw the same damn thing occur with the animals. The animals, when they exposed them to dengue fever, they died. And they got really sick and died, sicker than the ones who weren't given the vaccine. Same thing happened to the kids, and they died. The parents were beyond irritated and, you know, angry. And they had to escort some of the farm people out of Philippines. They were going to kill them. And, you know, that's a whole scandal that, you know, no one talks about. And, you know, think about everyone waiting for this vaccine. So what if you get sick from the vaccine? What if something happens? Who are you going to sue? You can't sue anyone because the companies have no liability.
No.
And, you know, they...
And it's you. You're a weirdo. An anti-vaxxer.
This is... and you can't debate it. You can't talk about it. And you can't, you know, because Facebook and Instagram, the rest of them will censor you. And it's just beyond belief that that's the United States of America that I live in and that I grew up in. I learned about the First Amendment. I learned about maybe you can't cry fire in a movie theater, but you can certainly, you can have Nazis on TV talking about Jews in derogatory terms.
And unbelievable.
They're protected for free speech. And you can't debate scientifically the literature on coronavirus and coronavirus vaccine because we say you can't. And
one of the really big spokespeople for vaccine safety, or maybe we don't need this kind of therapy, maybe it's the wrong therapy, RFK, Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, is just censored from Twitter and Instagram. Wiped out.
Yep. RFK, who only talks about the science,
right,
and who will debate any doctor, any place, he's said it, no one will debate him, now is off, you know, social media as well.
Wow.
So I think it's time we call our congresspeople, tell them we've had enough of this, and, you know.
There's such disgusting cowards. You think they're going to do anything? They're like cowards. They're afraid of money. They're just disgusting cowards. It's okay what you said. All that free speech to attack Jews. They're cowards. They have no values, nothing. And
then they're certainly not representing the people that elected them.
Yes, they are. The people that elected them are supporting them. I can't. Well, let's not start. Here we go. Carol and I will argue for the next hour. Dr. Brownstein, I am so proud of you, so proud of your work. Your book is called, can you tell us again?
A Holistic Approach to Viruses. And it's at my website, drbrownstein.com.
You're amazing. You saved, I can't tell you. I'm sorry, Carol. I can't tell you, just in my personal small little scope, I can't tell you how many people you saved. So I'm sitting here. I've got my hands in front of me. I'm bowing down. Thank you so much. Carol?
Yes, I just want to point out to go to drbrownstein.com. The blog is back.
Thank you.
It is back.
What
right,
a what!
Thank you, ladies. Let's do it again.
Oh, we'd love it.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA, CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me, left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.